Welcome to the Diplomats podcast on Asian geopolitics. I'm your host and diplomat editor, Ankit Panda, and joining me today is my colleague, Prashant Parmeshwaran. And the two of us are here this evening to discuss Indian Prime Minister Narendra Modi's recent whirlwind tour of East Asia, a trip on which he visited China, stopping first in Xi'an in Shaanxi province, Chinese President Xi Jinping's home province. Then traveling to Beijing, and finally Modi ended his trip in China and Shanghai. After concluding the China leg of his trip, Modi headed to Mongolia, a country that hasn't traditionally featured high on India's foreign policy agenda, but is nonetheless turning into a significant partner. And finally, Modi ended his trip in South Korea, one of Asia's great economies and democracies, where Modi emphasized the common values between the two countries and their continuing close partnership. So basically, over the course of the podcast, the way we're going to do this, I think, we're going to follow Modi's itinerary and just discuss the significance and the main takeaways from each leg of his visit, discussing the successes, the failures, where we were impressed, where we were maybe a little bit let down. And now Prashant and I mostly focus on defense and security issues, so I think the discussion will veer a little bit towards that, although this trip did have an important economic leg to it as well, as most of Modi's foreign visits do. And actually, before we start, Prashant, I actually want to just, you know, emphasize the point that I believe Modi was inaugurated on May 26th, 2014, and this is probably his last trip before, you know, concluding a year in office, and it rounds up a year of 18 trips abroad. And that's pretty impressive for an Indian prime minister. He's proven himself. Actually, you know, I mean, just to very briefly talk about Modi's first year in office, I mean, I don't think anybody really expected him to turn out to be such a dynamic diplomat. Everybody expected him to be inwardly focused since he campaigned on good governance and economic growth. But yet, here he is having completed 18 trips abroad. Anyways, Prashant, why don't you just tell me, you know, what really struck you about Modi's time in China? Obviously, it was a historic visit. Xi Jinping and Modi both incredible personalities and leaders with huge visions for their countries. So what was your main takeaway from this, from his time in China?
Yeah, I mean, I thought it was a pretty successful visit because I think he balanced things very well. I think on the one hand, he stressed areas where there could be potential cooperation. So there were a number of agreements signed. Not sure exactly what the amount is, whether it's, you know, closer to 10 billion, 20 billion, but they covered a number of areas, you know, education, scientific research.
I think the number I saw was 22 billion. That was the business to business agreements. Yeah.
Exactly.
Sorry, go ahead.
Right. Yeah. And then, so I think on the one hand, there definitely were elements of cooperation, but I think he also made it very clear that I think the wording was, you know, China needs to, you know, reconsider its approach on some of the issues holding the relationship back. So whether it's, you know, China's relationship with Pakistan or territorial disputes with India, that was particularly notable. So I think the balance that was struck was actually pretty well. Obviously, he got criticized nonetheless by some people. So the opposition back home, Congress, and some scholars were criticizing him for not being tough enough. There was that issue where Modi agreed sort of off the cuff to issue e-visas for China. And some people made a big deal about how it was not reciprocated by Beijing. So there's always these dynamics that play out. But I think for the large part, it was pretty successful, I think, in terms of the balance that he struck.
Yeah, I actually want to talk a bit more about that. And that was actually, you know, my major takeaway. You know, overall, I think this visit was a par visit as far as an India-China leaders summit goes. You know, the economic deliverables were there, the cultural, you know, the references to cultural ties were there, the overall platitudes were still present. But what really struck me was just how frank Modi was. Like you said, that quote about China needing to reconsider its approach was pretty remarkable. You know, I can't imagine Manmohan Singh, Modi's predecessor, ever saying something like that in China. He had a reputation as being a soft-spoken technocrat, but, you know, here's Modi, much more of a personality and much more of a visible Indian leader abroad. And it was also interesting that, you know, Modi, at least in his speech at Tsinghua University, told the audience that India and China need to ensure that the relationships with other countries do not become a source of concern for each other. So obviously, you know, there's been all this talk in India about containment, counter-containment, I believe is a term that Brahmachalani has popularized recently. But, you know, it's you look at China's relationship with Pakistan, China's relationship with Indian Ocean countries, and on the flip side, you look at India's relationships with Vietnam and India's growing relationships with ASEAN, Japan, South Korea, and it's clear that these two countries are, you know, playing playing a broader geopolitical game. And Modi, you know, I think him being willing to reference these trends is pretty remarkable. And also what I thought was interesting, you know, if you read the joint statement, you'd actually notice that Xi Jinping's pet project, the One Belt, One Road initiative, does not really show up, which is pretty remarkable. Again, India, you know, usually I think India hasn't really push too hard on these joint statements. You know, usually if China wants to include something, it's usually able to do so. But I think that, you know, that shows an extent that that shows that India did push back a bit. And, you know, you have to look at this visit, this overall visit, not just the China leg of it, but also the Mongolia and the South Korea legs, in terms of Modi's recasting of India's two-decade-old look east policy in terms of an act east policy, which I think is interesting. We're still kind of learning what exactly that means. It basically means Modi was unsatisfied with look as the operative verb. He thinks India needs to act. But, you know, it's I think at least in China, he did a good job of you know, showing that India would, you know, push back on China. And so that's that was definitely a very very interesting part of the trip for me. And you know, what was your take on, like, the whole you know, cultural aspect of this? Usually Indian diplomats, well, Indian leaders abroad don't really do much to, you know, have a personality or have sort of a popular appeal. But Modi, you know, he was taking selfies. I think he took the first ever selfie with Chinese Premier Li Keqiang, and, you know, he launched a meme when he was inspecting the terracotta warriors in Xi'an. I mean, what's your take on that? Is Modi trying to really, you know, do more of a people-to-people outreach with China?
Yeah, I mean, I think that was definitely, you know, one of the interesting dimensions of his trip, not just to China, but also South Korea and Mongolia. I mean, you saw in all three of those trips, I mean, Modi in general is kind of a sort of very sociable guy, you know, so he does tend to do these things. I mean, he's very active on Twitter. He does post a lot of photos and does take a lot of selfies as an individual. But it also jives really well with this focus on Indian soft power and sort of projecting this idea of India as a democracy, particularly in terms of, you know, in China, for example, where, you know, there was a focus there on, you know, opening a social networking account on Weibo, for example, right? In Mongolia, there was this sort of endless photos of him playing with, you know, musical instruments and engaging in sort of several cultural activities in the country.
Archery, so, yeah, most prominent.
Exactly,
archery.
Yeah. So I mean, it definitely is an interesting aspect of his diplomacy. I think it featured in all the visits, so it's definitely an interesting thing to watch.
Yeah, I mean, Indian soft power in China is an interesting issue. You know, I know some people that definitely know more about this topic than I do, who've, you know, spent time researching this in China. But it seems that overall, you know, the perception of India and China is not very positive. And you saw that when Modi launched his Weibo account. I mean, obviously, I think there were tens of thousands of people who welcomed him to the social network and, you know, said that they looked forward to his trip to China. But also there was a ton of criticism. Yeah, and you also have to consider, you know, with Twitter, you know, Modi must have been using a VPN when he was in China because Twitter is blocked in China. So, and you know, he was posting these pictures in pretty much real time, it seemed. So, yeah, he's definitely got a good grasp of the role of social media and new media in modern diplomacy. But anyways, you know, since you started the discussion about Mongolia, let's maybe pivot the conversation over there. So Mongolia is an interesting country. I think it has the unfortunate position of being probably the least interesting country in East Asia. And I don't mean that as an offensive term to Mongolia. I mean, the problem is that East Asia is probably a neighborhood that's too interesting for its own good. You know, Japan, South Korea, North Korea, China, and Mongolia. Unfortunately, Mongolia is always the one that gets the least diplomatic attention for most countries. But fortunately, its president, Sakya El-Bagdor, he's been an incredible activist. Mm-hmm. He's really raised the global profile of his country, forged partnerships with several countries. You know, he's pursued a third neighbor policy approach. Mongolia is landlocked between Russia and China, so it has few other partners in general, or it did before El-Bagdor came into power. Mm-hmm. And India, I believe, emphasized that. Modi used that same language, you know, referring to India as Mongolia's third neighbor when he was there. And there were a host of agreements that the two countries signed. Again, India extended a $1 billion credit line to Mongolia. Interestingly, India agreed to help train Mongolia's a military in cybersecurity, which was a pretty interesting development. I'm not sure, you know, the actual depth of that cooperation, but it's definitely interesting that India is reaching out. And I saw some commentators in India and also here in the United States that pointed to this visit as an example of India trying to do in Mongolia what China has been doing in the Indian Ocean, and maybe with Pakistan to a lesser extent. But do you agree with that? Do you think it's an example of India trying to, you know, get in China's neighborhood, in China's sphere of influence, so to speak, and try to set down some strategic routes?
Yeah, I mean, I think you that's one prism through which you could view it. I mean, the other prism would just be sort of it just emphasizes the degree of attention to which Modi is giving to neighborhood diplomacy, and that includes not just India's traditional partners and countries that are important like South Korea and China and Japan, but also Mongolia. So this is the first visit by an Indian prime minister to Mongolia. And the two countries are celebrating, you know, the 60th anniversary of their relationship. So, I mean, it seems like a good time if you're planning on visiting Mongolia and trying to expand India's role in Asia. It seems like a good time to do so. And I think there's some things that, you know, India gets out of this relationship as well. So I think you pointed out one, which is, you know, Mongolia gets some benefits in terms of cybersecurity training and the $1 billion line of credit. But you know, India gets something as well. I mean, you know, there was some support from Mongolia for India's role as a permanent member of the UN Security Council, which, you know, as we've discussed earlier, has not been so forthcoming from China, unsurprisingly. and so, I mean, there are things that India is getting as well. And then there's also this idea that, you know, as you pointed out, if you see it as a sort of jostling between India and China for a role in Asia, you know, India is sort of playing the field as well. So it has shown its ability to increase its ties with countries that traditionally, you know, some people might consider out of its, you know, orbit relative mm-hmm. to some of the other countries like Japan and South Korea. So I should also point out, I mean, in both the cases, in China and then also in Mongolia, there's some discussion about, you know, increasing defense cooperation. In Mongolia, for example, there was a statement suggesting, the joint statement, that the National Security Councils of both countries would, you know, hold consultations on several issues. There was a paragraph on counterterrorism in particular, which is a huge concern for both countries. And then intelligence cooperation as well. So I think it's very difficult to say at this point where it's going, because it seems like it's so new. But you know, the fact that you have some tangible illustrations of what cooperation will look like is promising for the future. So.
Yeah. And, you know, I mean, just like, I've been observing Mongolia's foreign policy for the past 2 years, which has been really interesting to watch. And it seems like Mongolia itself has just been interested in building partnerships east, west, north, south, just everywhere. I mean, if you just look at the number of trips its president has made abroad, yep. its relationship with the United States, Mongolia doesn't seem to really have a clear logic for its diplomacy at the time, at the moment. I mean, I think, you know, a big part of it is still that Mongolian policy is constrained by just its geography, its location between Russia and China. It's participating very closely in a trilateral format with those two countries. But at the same time, it's you know, making its presence known across the world, inviting investors to tap into its rich mineral resources and all that. So it'll be interesting to see where Mongolia, you know, reaches out to India, because, you know, it definitely has a lot to gain from India's cooperation. India is a major country, and, you know, Mongolia can definitely benefit on that front. And that actually, you know, I just actually reminded myself of something I wanted to emphasize, and I just want to bring it up before I forget during this podcast, is that if you look at Modi's rhetoric during this trip, and even during his recent trip, actually, when he was visiting France, Germany, and Canada, his rhetoric, you know, what he's been doing is been emphasizing India's economic dynamism. He's been a salesman for India in many ways. And, you know, part of that has to do with his Make in India initiative, which is to turn India into a manufacturing hub. But in China, you know, he essentially made the case that China needs to get involved in India before it misses out on India's, you know, historic opportunity for growth. And, you know, all of this comes amid estimates from the IMF and the World Bank that India's growth rate will soon outpace China, and India will be the largest, you know, the fastest growing major emerging economy. So that's always been a very interesting piece of Modi's diplomacy as well.
Yep. Absolutely. And I should also point out that we have that interview with the Mongolian ambassador via our Diplomatic Access series, which I invite our listeners to check out.
Yeah, definitely. That's a good plug. I think Shannon, at least, will definitely appreciate that shout out since she's been working very hard on that series, which is actually a great series to get a sense of what Asia's top diplomats are thinking. Anyways, let's move over to the next leg of Modi's visit, which was in South Korea. Now, South Korea was probably the, you know, at least for me watching this visit, watching this trip, it was probably the area that has the least surprises. India and South Korea have a close relationship. They've had an effective free trade agreement for a few years, the Comprehensive Economic Partnership Agreement. South Korea, South Korean businesses are incredibly invested in India. You know, there's a lot of manufacturing that goes on there. The two countries are democracies, similar values. They cooperate on a host of issues. So it was you know, not surprising to me when they upgraded their relationship to the level of a special strategic partnership and agreed to host a 2+2 dialogue. And for those listeners who maybe aren't aware, a 2+2 dialogue is a unique form of high level consultation between countries that usually involves the apex defense official and the apex foreign ministry official. So the only other country that India currently has this relationship with is Japan. So that's a very interesting development that now India has this close strategic relationship with both South Korea and Japan, two countries that I should also note are U.S. allies and both do have their own concerns about China. So Prashant, what was your take on the South Korean leg of Modi's trip?
Yeah, I mean, I think the two issues I was paying attention to was first on the business side. I mean, South Korean companies already have really big names in India, so whether it's Samsung or LG or Hyundai. But I think, as you mentioned earlier, the critical point, Modi's been trying to get several countries to be involved in India's Make in India initiative. And South Korea is, you know, one of the largest world economies and a member of the G20. India is obviously trying to draw it and its businesses to New Delhi and elsewhere in the country to get involved with that. And I think he definitely did that during the visit. I mean, meeting up with South Korean businesses and then speaking directly to them about, you know, the opportunities they should take advantage of, and also mentioning specifically which areas he would like them to invest in. I mean, you know, going as far as, you know, we want you to be involved in shipbuilding, LNG tankers, you know, these are the areas in which you want to invest in, and it makes sense for you to do so. I think the second thing that I'd mention is stuff on the defense side, which a lot of this, the groundwork was laid out already, because the defense minister, Manohar Parrikar, was already in Seoul in April 2015 for talks on the defense side and trying to get South Korea, which is obviously one of the world's largest largest producers and sort of exporters of arms, to get involved in India. So a lot of the groundwork is already laid, but I think in this visit you also saw in the joint statement wording about, you know, we can deepen cooperation in defense technology and defense manufacturing. And then also, I think there was a very specific emphasis. I think Modi is and his officials are very sensitive to the idea that there's a lot of rhetoric sometimes in these relationships and not a lot of follow-through. So I think in the joint statement, they made it a point to emphasize that, hey, listen, we're really serious about this. And we've actually set up a joint working group on shipbuilding specifically because we really want some of the top South Korean companies to set up shop in India, because this is something in which we're really looking at very seriously. So that's something that I found really interesting about the visit.
Absolutely, yeah. And a South Korean know-how when it comes to shipbuilding will be incredibly valuable for Indian shipyards, which are currently, you know, at least based on what I'm reading, they're pretty much at capacity. So they definitely need, you know, ways to streamline their productivity as India continues to modernize its navy and will soon be outputting its largest ever aircraft carrier and a variety of other projects. Now, very briefly before we end the podcast, I just want to go back to the issue of the China part of the visit. We touched about the issue on a bit, but you know, the one thing that we've the most watchers of India-China relations have been waiting for is concrete development on the border issue. And last year, after Modi was elected, China immediately started doing major outreach on this issue. Wang Yi traveled to India in the summer you know, essentially initiating a sort of reset with India, saying that, you know, we should start addressing this border issue in an earnest way. And that baton was picked up during Xi's September visit, although that visit was overshadowed due to a PLA border incursion. And again, you know, Modi's rhetoric in Beijing and both the joint statements, reminder of the joint working group on the border issue and the border defense cooperation agreement, which was signed in October 2013. But still, you know, there isn't really any sort of concrete indicator that the two countries are any closer to arriving on an understanding on the very difficult issues that still have to do with the border. I mean, this isn't like, you know, a lot of commentators who maybe don't watch this that closely have suggested ideas like, well, you know, there's two territories that these countries dispute. There's Arunachal Pradesh, which India administers and China claims, and there's Aksai Chin, which China administers and India claims. So why don't the two countries just agree to keep the parts they administer and give up the other one? It's not that simple. I mean, for China, you know, you have the issue of Tawang in Arunachal Pradesh, which is historically considered a part of Tibet and is very significant strategically for China's overall control over Tibet. And, you know, a bunch of Chinese analysts have been emphasizing this. You don't see a lot of discussion about this, at least at the high diplomatic level. I don't think I've seen many officials willing to, you know, directly address this issue. But, you know, overall, I just kind of laid out a few issues. But what's your take on this, Prashant? I mean, do you think that Modi and Xi, both leaders who have, you know, they have the benefit of time. Modi just finished his first year. Xi Jinping just finished, he'll finish his second year later this year. And, you know, they have the benefit of time to work on this issue. Do you think they'll be able to make real progress on this?
Yeah, I mean, obviously, as you pointed out, Ankit, I mean, this is it's a really knotty issue. I mean, and, you know, it's going to be really difficult to make significant progress in resolving it. I think, you know, you're absolutely right in terms of the lack of concrete progress this time around. They talk, you know, in the statement, they talk about expanding the number of border personnel meeting points, having more meetings, you know, more defense interactions and exchanges, but, you know, these don't get at the heart of the issue. I mean, I saw some analysis saying, you know, sort of, you know, half seriously that, you know, what we should be glad for in terms of the border issue is the fact that we didn't see a flare up, which sometimes we've seen in the past. and that's the extent to which we can expect this issue. So, you know, the degree to which we can expect progress is sort of, the extent to which the border issue doesn't cloud potential cooperation in other areas, and these two countries come to some sort of small piecemeal confidence-building measures and kick the can down the road to the future. But obviously, as you pointed out, that's no guarantee of actually resolving the issue, and there's always a chance that if it flares up again, you have the publics on both sides and then as well as the governments being under pressure to respond in kind. Yeah, not a very optimistic assessment. I don't think.
And, you know, there is this, I mean, you're right. I mean, there's this huge trust deficit on both sides. You know, how can India and China cooperate on resolving their border dispute when, you know, top strategists in both countries panic about, you know, for India, it's China's forays into the Indian Ocean, the whole idea of a string of pearls. And then for India, for China, the idea that India is, you know, slowly building links with Japan and Southeast Asian countries. I mean, there's just, you know, there is an acknowledgement that these two countries are fundamentally competitors, despite their cooperation. Mm-hmm. At this point, it seems to me that the best approach might be the Deng Xiaoping approach on the, you know, Senkaku Diaoyu approach, which is just kick the can down the road, 25 years, leave it to the next generation once, you know, your countries are very different, led by an entirely different generation of leadership and a completely different stage of growth. And honestly, I might think that the Modi government would go for something like that. They would, you know, I think overall, if India has anything resembling a grand strategy, it is economic growth, it is economic development. I think that was true for Modi's predecessor. I think it's true for Modi himself.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And with China, you know, there is a huge amount of space for positive sum cooperation between these two countries. Mm-hmm. So I think we might end up seeing that. But obviously, you know, that's a thing that we'll have to wait and see. I think we'll see incremental progress, but it'll be very difficult to actually for these two countries to actually come to a final agreement.
Yeah.
Anyways, Prashant, is there anything you'd like to add as a final closing thought today?
No, that's it.
Perfect. Well, thanks a lot for joining me. And thanks again, everyone, for listening. And if you have any comments or feedback on the podcast or suggestions for topics or for guests, please do leave us a review on iTunes. And I'll be back next week with more. Thank you.